The next case for argument is Schoper against Western Illinois University. Mr. Jokic.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Steve Jokic, and I represent the plaintiff appellant in this case, Dr. Sarah Schoper. I'm going to spend the bulk of my time on the legal principles involved in this case, but before I get to the legal principles, I'd like to highlight a couple of important facts that I think underlie those legal principles. The university in this case, demands that somebody going up for tenure be a superior teacher. And they have a numerical rating system. If you have scores of 3 to 4, you're a highly effective teacher. If you have scores of 4 to 5, you're a superior teacher. And if you're an absolutely perfect teacher and have a blanket score of 5, you're an excellent teacher. Prior to Dr. Schoper's traumatic brain injury, she had very, very strong ratings from both her students and from her faculty and department chair reviews. In her classes, for example, her student ratings exceeded 4 in 19 of the 21 classes that she taught.
Mr. Jokic, did your client ever ask for an accommodation?
Yes.
Now, the way I understand it, she had to attain a certain number in the year in which she was considered for tenure, and she didn't attain that number. Before she taught that year, did she ask for an accommodation with respect to her traumatic brain injury?
She asked for an accommodation after the first round of reviews for tenure. She went to her department chair and said, if I could have more time to submit my application, I could show that I'm meeting the university's criteria.
So the accommodation was not that she didn't have to attain the certain score
correct
in a particular year. The accommodation she requested was an additional year.
That's right. Well, actually, all she really needed was to have the scores from the semester she was in, the spring 2017 semester, considered with her application. Because if you had considered the scores that she obtained from her students and their ratings in the spring of 2017, those scores would have put her over the superior criteria for tenure. And I think the fact in this case that is very important on that point is the fact that under the system they have at Western, you are entitled to a terminal year after tenure is denied. And so it would not be unreasonable at the very first stage of the tenure process for somebody to say, look, I need more time because I'm doing very well this semester. And I think time will tell that I'm doing well.
And counsel, the CBA allows for a pause. And then you're talking about this in terms of an accommodation, but was any accommodation requested or any additional time requested before the decision was made regarding tenure?
So under the collective bargaining agreement, you can request to use something called stop the clock. And that gives you extra time to achieve tenure. You don't have to achieve it within the normal 6-year period. You might have an additional year. There were two problems with that in Dr. Schoper's case. One problem is that the stop the clock procedure must be invoked a year after your life event. Well, she suffered a traumatic brain injury on January 6th or 9th, 2015. That meant that stop the clock had to be invoked by January of 2016, which was really before she got her initial round of student evaluations from the first fall that she returned to work. So she didn't know the situation when she should have asked for stop the clock. Second, I would say that Dr. Schoper was under the very reasonable belief that when her application for tenure was considered, that they would look at her teaching scores for her entire period of employment at Western. And that proved not to be the case. And the first time she knew that that would not be the case was after the first round of evaluations, the one from her their department personnel committee and the one from her department chair. And at that point in time, when she learned that the focus would be on only the evaluations that she had received since she returned from her traumatic brain injury, she did two things. Number one, she submitted a letter from her neurologist to the personnel committee. The neurologist said she's improved a great deal. She'll continue to improve. Second, she went to her department chair and said, I would like some extra time for my improvement to be considered.
Isn't that too late under our case law? Isn't that too late to request an accommodation?
I don't think so. Under your case law, if I drive a police car, owing to my disability in a very unsafe way, and I get fired, that's too late. Okay.
But that isn't that what happened here? I mean, isn't it, you know, she was denied tenure and then she requested
No, what happened here, the tenure process is a many layered process. You have the department recommendation, you have the college recommendation, there's a university recommendation, and then the president decides. In this case, at the very first step of the process, she said there is a problem. After she received her departmental reviews and after she received the first review from the department chair. And in both cases, she wrote to them and said, there are issues here that I would like to address, as I indicated.
That's my concern. It'd be interesting. I don't know the answer to this question, but in the history of the academies, has any department recommended a teacher not receive tenure, but the teacher then received tenure? You know, I mean, the process is the department first recommends you for tenure, then it goes to the college, they recommend you for tenure, then it goes to whatever, the school, and I'm making this up, right?
University,
then it goes to the president, then the board of trustees, whatever. But once the department says, we're not going to recommend you for tenure, that's it. I mean, once you get a bad review, that's the end of the process.
Well, in the process at Western, if the department doesn't recommend you, you can ask for the college to reverse the department's recommendation, and you can ask for the university committee to do that as well. And in this case, the university committee actually did reverse the recommendation. They said, we think Dr. Schoper should get tenure, and it went on to the next step. And at the next step, all the president said was, well, I'm taking into account everything that happened before me, and I agree that she shouldn't get tenure. So it's a very unspecific, vague, you can't really figure it out reason. If you go back to the facts of this.
That's a problem for you as well, I think, because that goes to but-for causation, right? Okay. Because when the president said, I'm taking into account everything that is before me, that has, there were things before the president that had nothing to do with the traumatic brain injury.
I think that but for causation would be important on the discrimination piece
of
this,
right.
But I don't think it's important on the reasonable accommodation piece of this, because there's no dispute that with respect to the reasonable accommodation piece of this, that she asked for more time and the department chair said, we can't do it. And because the department chair said they couldn't do it, that was the end of the story in terms of a possible reasonable accommodation. And that's why I think if you look at the case law on reasonable accommodation, it says you can ask for it at any time in your employment. And that if the first set of reasonable accommodations doesn't work, you can ask for more. And that's what happened in this case. There were an initial set of reasonable accommodations that occurred right when she came back to teaching. And then after she realized that she wasn't popular among her students, she said, well, I need an additional reasonable accommodation, and that's to have some more time to show what I'm doing. And I think this case is much different than the other cases that are relied on by both the university and the district court, because it's not a case that involves misconduct, and it's not a case where the plaintiff is saying, I want to get out of jail free. And it's not a case where we're asking the employer to maintain somebody in their employment for longer than they otherwise might have done it. So, for example, in this case, if she'd been able to put off the final tenure decision until her scores from the spring that she was in were considered, she might have achieved tenure because those scores would have put her above the threshold. Similarly, if she would have just, if during the terminal year, she had been considered for tenure as opposed to in the year before her terminal year, her scores likewise would have been much higher because they would have had the scores from both the spring of 2017 and the fall of 2017, which were exceptional and very much in the range of her prior scores. It's impossible in this case to get around the fact that her scores were really high and really strong before the traumatic brain injury, that they went down when she went to work after the traumatic brain injury, and that they rebounded. So the only issue really, if you step back and you look at what happened here, is did the university have the right in March of 2017 to say, we're not going to consider your request for reasonable accommodation? And given the fact that she was entitled to a terminal year to teach anyhow, the idea that there was some exigency that required the university to make up its mind at that moment does not, in this case, give the university any support. As I mentioned before, the case law and the policy of the ADA is, number one, that you have to bend your rules occasionally. That's the whole idea. And the case law is that a request before the end of your employment is usually has to be considered by the employer. And the case law is that if the accommodation the first time doesn't work, you're entitled to request more. And the case law is finally that the employer is required to engage. Now, if the employer had engaged in this situation, there were a lot of different results that could have happened. But instead, there was a summary rejection of the request for additional time. So I think that we have made out the elements that we need to make out to survive summary judgment on the reasonable accommodation claim. And I think that the district court's decision to the contrary is really contrary to the law and the policy of the Americans with Disabilities Act. We also have in this case a discrimination claim. And the discrimination claim is based upon the notion that the customer preference of the students can't be the reason why you make an employment decision in a case such as this. And again, that goes back to what I think is the most notable portion of the facts in this case, that she was doing exceptionally well before her traumatic brain injury, and that she had a decline and then a spike back up after the decline. I think it's important in this case, and again, you know, every ADA case will turn on its facts. I think it's important in this case to note that during the same period she was getting only highly effective ratings from her students, she was getting ratings of superior, both from her department chair who evaluated her and from her faculty peers that evaluated her. And what that, I think, supports is an inference that the substance of her teaching hadn't really declined, even though perhaps her ability to dazzle a bunch of graduate students had declined as a result of her traumatic brain injury. And in that case, if the reaction of the graduate students that she's teaching in her classes is based upon the fact that she doesn't move as well or talk as well, or has to set up a classroom so that she doesn't have to look to the left, or has to remain seated at the front of the classroom, I think that that is a form of customer preference in the disability context that the university is responsible for. And I think in that way, the university is responsible for discrimination as well. So I think if you stand back in this case, and I think if you say, well, what skin would it have been off the university's nose for the university to say, yeah, we'll give you an extra semester for your results to come in, or we'll let you go up for tenure in your terminal year, but be aware that we're going to make this exception and you can't have another terminal year. And then you look at what happened. You know, this is not a situation where the court has to speculate, well, what would have, you know, how would the tape be if it were rerun? If you look at what happened, she did very well the next year. She did very well that spring. And if she'd have had a chance to use those scores in her application for tenure, she would have achieved tenure. And that's why we think that the district court's decision has to be reversed.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Clark.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I want to start by saying this is obviously a very sensitive subject. No one would wish Dr. Schoper's brain injury on anyone. But the focus here is really on what happened when Dr. Schoper returned to work and on the university's evaluation of her application for tenure. Now, in May of 2015, Dr. Schoper was released by her neurologist to return. That came with accommodation requests. The university reviewed what Dr. Schoper's physician said she needed, and the university did what Dr. Schoper's physician said she needed. So Dr. Schoper says she's ready. Dr. Schoper's physician says she's ready. The physician says how she should be accommodated. The university moves forward with that. And that was 2015. So she taught the fall 2015 semester, the spring 2016 semester, and the fall 2016 semester, all before she applied for tenure. Using the criteria, the very unbiased criteria that are set forth in the collective bargaining agreement, the various levels of review and comment, the answer was no. She ultimately wasn't recommended for tenure by the president. Now, she claims that this was the university discriminated against her, but law isn't based on conspiracy theories. It's based on evidence. And essentially what Dr. Schoper is asking you to believe is that this is a discriminatory act that was committed by an entire department of her peers, her department chair, the college personnel committee, the dean, the president, and her students, that they were all in cahoots to discriminate against her. And that's not evidence. That's a theory. There's nothing that supports it. And there's certainly nothing that supports it from a but-for nature in terms of the burden of proof here. Dr. Schoper can't point to anybody who was similarly situated, who she claims was treated more favorably. There's no evidence of pretext. There's no evidence of a cover-up. And really what Dr. Schoper here is saying is, hey, listen, you're wrong about me. I am a superior teacher. I am a good teacher. But in this analysis, that doesn't matter. That's academic disagreement. And it's well known and noted in case law that, you know, we talk about the court not sitting as a super personnel department. And that's especially true when it comes to that tenure decision. At the end of the day, Dr. Schoper, her physician, said she was ready to return. University accommodated her. She didn't want to stop the clock, and she didn't meet the criteria. You know, at some point she had noted that, well, there were some biased remarks against her, but, you know, as the district court noted, even if you construed those remarks as biased, there are numerous different levels of review and recommendation. And I believe Judge Kirch, you had commented that, well, you know, even the president, when we talk about the but-for nature of causation, you know, each of these levels of review is independent. And the president is the one that gets the last word on whether to recommend to the Board of Trustees. And there's nothing here that indicates that anyone was influenced by bias. And frankly, that's the case with respect to the student comments. The student comments, Mr. Yogesh just mentioned, you know, customer preference. Those student comments don't talk about Dr. Schoper's disability. They don't talk about her medical situation. They talk about how she has favorites in class and she treats people differently. She talks about how she regularly stresses tenure and the fact that their evaluations will weigh in her tenure decision. She talks about how much she loves the students and makes them uncomfortable. There's the student comments that were qualitative don't have anything to do with Dr. Schoper's disability. Frankly, top to bottom, there's nothing here that would support the type of but-for causation that Dr. Schoper needs to support a discrimination cause of action here. And with respect to failure to accommodate, let's take the specifics out of this. If we have a situation where an employee says, yes, they can return to work, their physician agrees, they suggest some accommodations, employer engages in that interactive process, employer does what the physician has requested. Everything proceeds. Employee gets some evaluations indicating that performance is not where it needs to be. And then ultimately, when it's time to separate employment, the employee says, no, I need an accommodation. Well, under our case law, that's too late in the game. And at this point, excuse me, Mr. Jokic has indicated, well, the university didn't engage in that interactive process. This is on the university. Well, Dr. Schoper didn't think that she needed an accommodation either. Dr. Schoper's physician doesn't think that she needs an accommodation. She had the ability to take extra time and didn't think that it was necessary. And I do also want to add that with respect to the physician's note that Dr. Schoper submitted after she realized that she had some problems and likely was not going to be recommended for tenure. That physician's note talks about capacity, and it says that she's currently working in 60 to 80% capacity, and that soon she'll be able to return to full capacity. It's not saying that her levels of teaching are going to increase. It's not saying brain functionality will improve. It's talking about her capacity to be at work and what that percentage level looks like. But at the end of the day, this isn't the type of an accommodation that the ADA talks about. The ADA, if you look at the language, it talks about job restructuring, part-time or modified work schedules, reassignment to vacant positions, new equipment or devices. It doesn't talk about changing the criteria. We don't accommodate to put someone in a position to excel or to be promoted. That's not the standard we accommodate to. We accommodate to perform essential functions. And that really was the that's the case also in the excuse me, in the case law cited by Mr. Jokic. In his briefs, he refers to Extran v. School District. There we're talking about should a teacher be in a different classroom? And these were cases that Mr. Jokic has cited too in terms of the ongoing obligation of an employer to make accommodations and to engage in that interactive process. That's what we're talking about here. It's a different classroom. The Boltmeyer case was a custodian who had mental illness, who, after the fact, the school district received a note saying that, hey, this person with mental illness is not able to advocate for themselves, and this custodian, excuse me, if it's possible to move the custodian to another school, to another facility, that the school district should consider doing that. Dr. Schoper can definitely advocate for herself. It's very clear that she knows how to do that. And this isn't a situation where the request is move me to a different room or excuse me, adjust the environment of my teaching facility. This is a situation where Dr. Schoper is asking for the entire set of criteria to be rewritten. What she's asking for is not a reasonable accommodation here. I believe that I had set forth the university's arguments in the written brief, and we'll let the court consider that further. If you have specific questions, I'd be happy to answer those. And if not, then I would ask that summary judgment be affirmed.
Thank you. Mr. Jokic, you have 12 seconds. So maybe just eight. Speak very quickly.
So there's a distinction between asking for tenure and asking a chance for a better chance to show that you're qualified for tenure. And I think that distinction goes to the heart of this case.
Thank you, Mr. Jokic.
Thank you.
The case is taken under advisement.